welcome to a special Thursday edition of MGO Radio. How you doing, Ace?
Thursday. I'm doing all right.
Thursday is Thor's day, isn't it?
I guess so. Yeah.
Friday is Freya's day.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very Norse.
Yeah.
This is what you learn listening to the MGO podcast, MGO Radio, whatever. So Michigan plays Michigan State.
And that's all we have to say about that.
For a given definition of the word place. Oh, I forgot the sponsors.
Oh.
That gives us like...
We're off to a very professional start.
It gets us like 30 seconds. We don't have to talk about this game.
That's true. That's great.
Let's do it. Sponsors of this lovely blog are Underground Printing, The Bow Store, The Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown, Homesure Lending, Peak Wealth Management, the Alumni Association the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Lantana Hummus, Human Element, Ecotelligent Homes, and Michigan Law Grad.
I was wondering how long that was going to go on. That was more than 30 seconds, I think.
Well, you clearly expressed your discontent with my joke. And as a punishment, now we have to talk about the Michigan State game.
Ah, crap.
All right, so here's how we're going to do this. You are going to present a hypothetical bitch.
Okay.
You're going to pitch a bitch. I'm gonna be like, do I agree with that or not? And it doesn't have to be your personal opinion.
Well, yeah, almost none of these are going to be my personal opinion at all.
Things you've seen on the internet from bald men named Pete. Go. Pitch a bitch.
Fire Harbaugh? I mean, that does not even worth discussion. Yeah,
who said that?
I mean, it's not really been fire. It's more just been like, or how about this? The heat is on Jim Harbaugh.
The heat is not on. Oh, yo, whoa.
How about 1-4 against your rivals is unacceptable?
I mean, that's just so... Like, okay, he is 1-4 because of a punt. Mm-hmm. And... because of some business that is very painful to this day, but was also, I mean, they lose at a playoff team in overtime by a literal inch after dominating most of that game and being beset by some unfortunate turnovers that were maximally punished.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they got badly outplayed in the first Ohio State game. But they've outplayed Michigan State every time they've played them, except for this one. And even that was kind of like, you 5 turnovers, you lose by 4 points.
Mm-hmm.
And they outplayed Ohio State. So like they have a winning record in like my heart and nobody else's.
In that vein,
yeah,
Mark D'Antonio owns Jim Harbaugh.
Oh, come on, man.
Okay, that was the
answer. I mean, that's like a Michigan State thing.
You'd be surprised. I mean, you shouldn't be surprised. You also have Twitter mentions.
Well, like, oh, he lost the opener against Harbaugh.
Yeah.
And then got rescued by fate. And then he got his ass kicked in year two and then made it look pretty.
Mm-hmm.
Shine up that turd.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes in and there's a monsoon and backup quarterback. And like, okay, Michigan is not an elite team this year. And it took you... 5 turnovers to none for Michigan to win that game.
Yeah.
So, nah. Can we get some more specific, like...
All right, it's time to put in Brandon Peters.
Wow, that's a that's a good one.
Yeah.
So, John O'Korn in this game was bad. And we talked about it a little bit on the Monday podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And I went over the film, and it didn't really change my opinion. If anything, I was even a little bit... more pessimistic after seeing it because, you know, those 2 fades on the Michigan's first drive, he has open guys.
Yeah.
And I don't know what he's looking at Eddie McDoom on a fade for. And then the one before that where he tries to hit McCune, the thing that really grated about that play is it felt like Michigan, their entire play scheme was set up to, like, have Gentry be the first read.
Yeah, and that he was springing open coming across the
and
field.
And he's 6'7".
Yeah.
So
yeah, he's the guy who should be punting it to, no matter even if he's covered.
Right. Yeah, and I looked like he decided what he was going to do before the snap, and then he did that, and it didn't matter like what the deal was.
Yeah.
So that was more in line with what we saw against Indiana. It's more in line with what we saw again when he was at Houston. Mm-hmm. So now Purdue seems like an outlier. And, I mean, he's a fifth-year senior. So is he going to improve a lot? Probably not. This is probably who he is. And he was much better than he was against Indiana.
Yeah.
He was – it wasn't hopeless that Michigan would score until they ripped off some
he wasn't, like, running backwards 15 yards.
Right, yeah. I mean, he's obviously improved a lot, but he's not going to get a ton better. And then, like, okay, is this a Citrus Bowl team? Is it an Outback Bowl team? It really doesn't seem like a Rose Bowl team right now.
No, it doesn't. It's a Rose Bowl defense.
It is. So how much are you sacrificing if you turn to Brandon Peters, and how much worse is Brandon Peters going to be? I don't know.
Now the question is, do you worry about a Devin Gardner situation with Peters putting him behind this offensive line?
Okay, this offensive line is not anywhere near as bad as that
offensive line. I know that offensive line was worse. This offensive line is still giving up a lot of pressure, and you worry about with young quarterbacks throwing them into a situation where they're under a lot of heat, they're getting sped up, and they never get a chance to feel comfortable, and sometimes that carries over and can almost harm development.
They have this, like, PTSD kind
of thing. Where it's like you've become permanently sped up in the pocket. And Peters, going behind this offensive line, would get a lot of pressure in his face.
Yeah, I mean, well, mostly from the right tackle spot.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's going to be in his face.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I mean, that...
He's right-handed, after all.
I mean, I think you start O'Corn against Indiana and see how he does. I mean, mm-hmm. He'd have a good game against Purdue. And then, you know, if Michigan's offense is scuffling at halftime, and maybe you look at it. Maybe, like, all right, we're going to put him in and see what happens.
So it's still at, like, O'Corn for now, but another slip-up, and it's probably time for Peters.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want like, to say, like, the season's over, toss it away. Like, okay, maybe Michigan State was the outlier, and Purdue is what O'Corn is. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's the case, but he deserves, like, at least another shot to just show that might be true.
Yeah. building on the hot takes, how much did you think, I guess this isn't a hot take, how much did you think the rain played in with O'Corn? Because when I went back through my notes after we did the weekend podcast, I had the rain as being much more of a factor in terms of when it came in and how it correlated to his interceptions.
Well, you were in the press box, and I was out there. Like a man.
Yeah. Well,
like a man.
Well, being in the press box, you do get to see all of the weather.
Or a woman.
You get
who's
to see
also
it.
A man.
We are also
a man
surrounded
woman.
By televisions.
A man woman.
I'm just ignoring you and continuing to talk. That's how I'm going to handle this.
A woman. Anyway, because there were plenty of ladies out there.
Yeah.
Brave in the elements, unlike you.
That's fair.
I didn't think it was actually that big of a deal, except for, like, the monsoon section.
Yeah.
So there was that 3rd-and-3 interception where he fumbles the ball and then he's just panicking and gets rid of it. I think that was mostly a terrible play call on 3rd-and-3. Like, it's a monsoon. You've been running pretty well. 3rd-and-3, just try to pick it up.
Yeah.
And I think that interception is mostly because he puts the ball on the turf and he's rolling out and someone's in his face and he's just getting rid of it. And, you know, the third one was such a titanic overthrow that feels like it might have been affected by the rain. I don't know if you can... I mean, it's like 3rd-and-9 or 12 or something, and he's taking a deep shot at Gentry to convert. Like, you got to make that throw.
Yeah.
You got to take that shot, because he is open.
Yeah, he just missed really bad.
Yeah, he just pulled the taco pants. And so, like, that's a fine decision, and like... He was actually pretty accurate in this game. I mean, he missed a couple throws.
Mm-hmm. He was just choosing the wrong guys to go at.
Right, yeah. But, like, I mean, you know, his receivers didn't help him out. Like, he had a beautiful, like, fly route down the sideline to Crawford that went through Crawford's hands and hit him in the head. And I was, like, frustrated.
Yeah.
And then people, like, he had another bomb to Peoples-Jones that was a little bit too far outside. But that is a catchable ball. Like, I didn't think that was a great throw, but... You know, given the wind, I think that's an acceptable throw.
Yeah.
So his accuracy was pretty good most of the day, except for that throw. So probably that was affected by the rain. But, I mean, you can't just run on 3rd-and-12 and punt.
Yeah. All right, next one. Michigan should move Bradison out to tackle.
Yes.
All right.
I mean, they should have done it a year ago.
Before the season, yeah.
But, like, so you see Elizio, and Elizio gets pulled, and Bushel Beatty comes in, and his first snap, he gives up a terrible sack to a walk-on defensive end. And I'm just like, Oh, God.
Like, they must have seen this all offseason.
I mean, there's a reason that he was behind Elizio, right?
Yeah. Like,
I mean, he was pretty good on the ground. I think he's a clear upgrade on the ground. And if they're about as bad as pass protectors can be, then you might as well play the guy who can run block. So, I mean, I think they're going to go with Bushel Beatty this game and maybe the next game. And then if, you know, if they just get ham blasted because they can't pass block on the right side, who else are you going to put out there? You might put Stuber out there. He's a true freshman, but what else are you going
to
do?
I mean, it seems like the best play is just to throw either Runyon or Ruiz in on the interior and kick Bredesen out because...
Yeah. And I talked about this in the UFR where it's incredibly frustrating to see this because you have Runyon and you're confident enough in Runyon to like platoon him with...
Yeah, you're running him out there, and you're also running him out there at right tackle in the fall camp and this chunk of the spring where you're playing a guy wildly out of position just to get him out on the field. Meanwhile, you've got like a tackle-shaped guard.
I mean, he's like a cool...
Bredesen's a swing guy.
He's a swing guy, right?
So but Runyon is pure guard. That guy is pure... We thought he might be a center only coming out of high school.
Yes.
So at that point,
why
are you going so far to put that guy at a spot that puts him wildly out of position when you have another guy who makes way more sense there?
Yeah, I was about to say that.
Yeah,
exact same thing.
So yeah, I guess the next hot take is Tim Drevno hot seat.
I mean, I'm kind of feeling it. I mean, the nice thing about this game that didn't really come through in the like overall stats but came through in the fancy stats is that the run blocking was actually very, very good.
Yeah.
So everybody on the line except Elizio was significantly positive. Michigan's overall like blocking number was 68%, which is above our 66% Mendoza line. Mm-hmm. That's 13% better than last week against the defense. That's probably better. It was a major step forward. And part of that was that Michigan went away from being like a very, very heavy inside zone team to
more of the Harbaugh offense.
Well, I mean, they split it about down the middle, so it was a little bit more zony than they had been previously, but they had some traps. They ran a lot of power. They got a couple of effective crack sweeps. And it felt more like the diverse and unpredictable Harbaugh offense we saw the first 2 years.
Yeah.
So I like that. I think that if they can maintain that level of run blocking, you know, Michigan's offense will look better. And in the UFR, I pointed out that this was a situation where the like offensive line stats, which I've always thought were kind of janky, were perfect.
Yeah,
because Michigan was above average in line yards. They were above average in opportunity rate, which is like the number of 5 yard runs you get, and they were horrendous at getting yards past five.
Yes.
So part of that was situation. Part of that was the rain. Part of that was the fact that Michigan couldn't pass block long enough to get the safeties to respect Michigan's pass game. So they were in full Narduzzi mode and coming down and making tackles like 6-7 yards from the box. Part of that was running backs not making plays. Make plays!
Make plays.
I need to change my gimmicky top five maybe. It's not really a call.
No.
It's not really a call.
No, it's not. That gets its own special categorization.
But, I mean, I think it was a step forward for the offensive line, and I think that's a good thing for Tim Drevno. I am, you know, still, we talked about the personnel stuff that I'm a little bit peeved about.
Indeed.
So.
And you're not alone there.
Yeah.
I guess, I don't know if I've seen necessarily this hot take, but do you think Michigan has, like, a true Michigan starting quality running back? Or is it too hard to tell sometimes?
Yeah, given the stuff that's going on in front of them, like they miss a lot of cuts. I mean, I still like them, but I mean, I'm obviously a little bit down on Evans relative to where I was preseason when he was supposed to be like this visionary, and that's not happening.
No,
and Higdon played well the last 2 weeks. He's missed some big cuts early in the season.
Like almost literally every game before that, he's missed a touchdown.
Yeah, and he hasn't been explosive, but he averaged 5.54 yards a carry here, and I think he did everything about right. I mean, there was a couple like little niggling things that I didn't have a problem with, but I mean, there's no Mike Hartz on this team.
No, I mean the most physically gifted guy is the guy who keeps fumbling the ball.
Yeah, but they're better than, like, you know, the Derek Green.
Yeah, this isn't a Michael Shaw, Carlos Brown outfit.
I mean, I give them like a C plus.
Yeah,
I guess. Although they lose a lot of fumbles.
Yeah, that's lower than we expected it to be coming into the season. Yeah. That's for sure.
Yeah.
I don't know if I have any more hot takes.
Well, we've pretty much addressed most things.
I guess should they bench Cocoa Crawford?
For who?
That's kind of my question too.
I mean, Nate Shanley didn't play in this game, and I have to assume that's because of injury. Because he looked good. I would play Shanley instead of Crawford. I mean, he's you got to rotate him in and keep him involved. But like, if I'm targeting someone, I want it to be Shanley probably, or Perry. I don't understand why Perry doesn't get half the targets. That's the other thing.
It feels like all the balls should go to Perry in the tight end.
That's the other thing that drives me crazy about the like fade in the end zone to McDoom is like Perry.
Yeah.
Throw it to Perry.
The guy who catches the ball.
Yeah. But I don't even want to talk about that part.
Yeah.
I mean, they really... I didn't know that losing Black was going to be as crushing as it appears to have been, but it looks pretty crushing here.
Indeed.
And they haven't played Martin. They haven't played Collins, so you got to figure that those guys are on track for red shirts, which... I don't think it means anything about their long-term potential because freshman wide receivers suck TM, but it's not looking great. It's looking decidedly ungreat.
It doesn't seem like there are many issues that they're going to be able to fix over the second half of the season. I mean, there are things that they can get better at, but like quarterback is probably going to be a sore spot.
Yeah.
Right tackle is absolutely going to be a sore spot unless they switch things around so that then maybe one of the other positions on the offensive line is a sore spot. Yeah. And receiver is going to be a sore spot.
Yeah. I mean, the step forward in the run blocking, I think, was important.
Yes.
Like, they did some things where they saw blitzes, they picked up blitzes, and they created holes based on what the opposition was doing. That was excellent.
And they got improvement out of a slight change in approach too.
Yeah, and then I thought Bushel Beatty was an upgrade on Elizio on the ground, not so much in the pass game. And on Wayne, who had a legitimately good day. He was Pro Football Focus All Big Ten this week. I agreed with that take. I thought Kugler was at about the same level.
Mm-hmm.
And the two guys on the left I thought had good games as well. So add in Tyrone Wheatley really mashing on some guys, and like Wheatley still has like a very subtle like black cast on his hand, so he's very much a run tip right now. But get him healthy, and then I mean, you have if Bushel Beatty can really move people, then you can line up those three guys together, and you can run power at that all day.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you know, I'm hopeful that this will be at least a moderate turning point for the run game. I don't think it's going to be out of this world, but you might be able to hang your hat on it a little bit more than you would otherwise. I think that about covers it.
Yeah, can we talk about the defense?
Yeah.
Please.
We can talk about the defense. Why don't you say something while I put this cough drop in my mouth?
I mean, they're still just absolutely dominant. You know, this game was... This game was a game that if your defense plays like that, you win it probably 97% of the time.
Yeah. 14 drives, 1 point per drive.
And what's encouraging about this defense also is that we keep seeing new encouraging things every week, and this week it was LeVert Hill's coverage.
Yeah, he was great.
I mean, him dropping out of that zone to make that pass breakup was one of the more impressive plays any Michigan defenders made in the secondary this year. And then he had two more impressive pass breakups, didn't let anything get behind him. I mean, he looks like a real player.
They have 94 passing yards, and 16 of those are on a screen.
Yeah.
And then 40 or something are on, like, the double-clutch ball where Watson's in great coverage and basically gets a pass breakup.
The Roy Roundtree.
Yeah. It's a 7 on the Roundtree scale. And other than that, they had the one, like, Michigan State drop, which turned out to be flagrant offensive pass interference. there were two unbelievable instances where like Michigan State receivers are just literally blocking, like they're grabbing onto guys. One of them didn't get called because Lewerke didn't throw the ball.
I mean, what do you expect from a John O'Neill crew? I don't think the officiating had any impact on the outcome of this game, but that dude is terrible at his job.
Yeah, there was a little bit of frustration there. I mean, Michigan got away with some holds, though.
Yeah, like, absolutely. I noticed a few.
There were a couple of guys like surging up the middle who just suddenly stopped moving.
Yeah, it's like, how does that happen?
Yeah, well, how's that happen? Well, So Rubin's racing, I guess.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it was interesting to see Michigan's deployment. They did actually go with a fair amount of, like, just a plain old 3-4.
Yeah.
They played a lot of Brian Monet, and Monet didn't have an awesome game.
But he kind of unleashed Mo Hurst a little bit.
He did. So Mo Hurst got to go back to the 3-tech, and he was a beast.
He had the highest grade in the country of any player last week from Pro Football Focus.
Yeah, he got blown out on, like, their successful power play. Mm-hmm. And the rest of the game, he was just a complete maniac.
He was practically taking handoffs.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's nice that Michigan has that in their back pocket.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to go man ball on this, okay, well, our Sam is Furbush, and we're bringing in a 330-pound guy.
Yeah, because I think the worry a little bit is that we just haven't seen enough of Monet to know what he brings necessarily, and this was at least another data point going, okay, you can throw him out there for half the snaps, and you unlock Mo Hurst beast mode.
Yeah, and he had
and
a couple of
and Monet
plays.
Holds up. I mean, yeah, you know, that up. Guy is tough to move.
So, I thought this was a good game for Rashawn Gary. He had a sack that was only like a fractional yard sack, so they didn't give it to him. And mm-hmm. I was like, come on.
That dude is, he's so close to so many more stats than he has right now.
He made a number of impressive plays in space. Bush was relatively quiet. I don't know if that was a game plan thing or just a man ball thing or Michigan State paying a bunch of attention to him. But
yeah.
he was good. He just wasn't.
He had more trash to pick through than normal.
He wasn't out of his mind.
Yeah.
Which is the one thing.
And we've gotten used to that.
So, like, I did think that on the big 50-yard run that they had, he did not scrape over Mo Hurst getting blown out. And maybe that's because he just doesn't expect that to ever happen. But McCray actually does a good job of, like, getting into the lead blocker and funneling it back to his help, and his help is in there. So I thought that was mostly on Bush, but, you know, one bad play, maybe two more in a game is an acceptable rate.
Yeah.
The whole defense is kind of a Mo Hurst the defense right now, where it's so good it's almost like a little boring to talk about.
There's not a lot to say. There really isn't. They're
like, they're still doing what they do.
Yeah, they kicked the other team off the field in three plays. There's only so much you can say about that.
Yeah.
But that part was fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I was like, okay, where's our defensive touchdown? We're really going to need it in this one. never happened.
Didn't quite materialize.
I mean, Lewerke had a rain-based overthrow.
Yeah.
And it just got over the hands of David Long, and I'm just like, I mean, that was this game, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, you got the punt muff that bounces right back to the guy, too. I mean, you know.
Well, they fumbled four or five times, and they didn't lose any of them.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of those are fumbled exchanges where you're going to get those back probably 80% of the time anyway. But
yeah, well, don't tell Wilton Spate the Ohio State game. I mean, the fluck has been negatory, man.
Yeah, yeah, it has not been great.
Fumble luck, by the way. That's for our listeners.
I knew what you were going
for. I know you. I know you're hip.
Yeah,
you were. We're gonna have to get like a new like 20-something.
So. Yeah, I'm about to be 30, man. I'm exiting hipness in a hurry.
Well, good.
No longer making y'all feel unhip.
Well.
Or did that never happen?
That's never really been. Okay. Oh, I feel a hip today. I feel like I could go to a rave today. That's never happened, Ace.
You know, I've never done that either.
Time's running out. Time's running out.
Time ran out.
Yeah,
it's over.
Do you have that one like house party you went to when you graduated college?
Oh, I've got plenty from high school and college that I can go back to and go, I did my thing.
No. I mean, like the house party you go to after you graduated from college or you're in grad school or something, and you're just like, I can no longer go to these.
Oh, but my experience
like
is more
you're 24 and you go to a house party and you're like, oh my God, all these people are teenagers.
It's
Do you still go to house parties?
Well,
it sounds like you do.
It's because I'm from Ann Arbor, so and people come back here. So like a house party that people hold is usually more like 10 or 15 people anyway, and it's all people I know and grew up with. So that part's fine.
So they're like having beer pong on outside and like
sometimes
drinking,
doing chill. I mean,
Edward
it's not
40
like
hands and stuff like that.
Not maybe not Edward 40 hands, but you know. Grab a case and hang out.
That's not a house party.
So like,
is there
so here's the thing. I'm trying to explain.
Okay, well you're not doing a good job.
You're not letting me finish. So the options are either something chill like that, or going out and hitting the bars. I did hit my point of just like going out and hitting the bars at night, where it's just like I don't like doing this. Like this is not fun.
Yeah.
Like I'll go grab a drink with a few people, but I don't do the like group and mass like moving like the whole bar crawl thing.
Oh yeah.
Like a couple years ago, I got dragged along on a bar crawl like benefit thing, and by like bar three, I was like, "Why am I here?" Like I know this is charity, but I don't like.
How
this.
Are you on concerts?
Oh,
are you getting cranky when concerts don't start like kind of on time?
To be honest, this was part health induced, but I got cranky with concerts starting in like college, where like the noise level and the amount of energy it took just to do it was like I'll just listen to the album at home,
right? Like, yeah, and then you get there and
like
it's
the sound quality is way better. Like I'm just getting mashed by a bunch of people.
Yeah, oh, they're like people walk by you and they give you a little bump and they're not trying to do it, but it happens like. 5 times in a minute, and you're just like, okay, where's my knife?
Yeah.
Did I bring my knife?
I'm getting stabby.
I don't even own a knife. Oh, God.
This is why I need a knife.
All right, so
this
like...
This is why I don't need a knife.
You're like 40% old, and I'm like 60%
old. Yeah, I'm getting there. But to be honest, the thing that I would have tapped out on, but I haven't because of my job, is live sporting events.
What?
I mean... There is an enormous... Well, especially like going... like. In college, I would go to road games all the time.
Yeah.
That for me now is like, that's a hassle, man. That's a whole thing.
Really? I mean, yeah. It is true that
you've been with me on a couple trips where it was like, man, this did not feel worth it.
Well, yeah, but
a lot of that has to do with the football, but that's part of it.
But I'm kind of there too, not because I like the sports less, but because the in-stadium experience has consistently degraded.
Yeah, I mean, like you're...
Like the redhead is out there like... after a three and out, and I'm like, I am going to strangle you.
You're sitting there for a long time. You're not getting the same level of information that you would if you were watching on TV, which for me is a big deal. You know, this is my job. I'm supposed to follow this, and you get better.
Box.
Yeah, but the TV view is not great from there, at least specifically where Adam and I are. We've talked about this. We have a very dim television where we are.
Really?
And you don't get the play-by-play, which sometimes really helps you figure out what's going on.
Not so much in this game.
Yeah, it depends on who's calling the game.
I had a totally different take on what Kirk Herbstreit was like. Oh, the linebacker did a really good job. I'm like, oh, my God. Do you know what Michigan's right tackle situation is like, sir?
No. I mean, like for me, live sports would be great if I could just get teleported into my seat. And then teleported back when I'm gone. But the whole, like, sitting in a car going 2 miles an hour, leaving the parking lot.
I'm upgrading you to 50% old man.
Yeah. No, I'm there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I turned 30 in December. It's going to be over
at
that
point. But, like, you know, you'd go to, like, Yoast.
Oh, yeah.
So that's absolutely. Not like a...
If it's something that's walkable, but since I'm coming in from, you know, 20 minutes out, and then it becomes an hour when you include game traffic, that changes the equation.
You're so old. You are so old.
Yeah.
All right.
That's what I was
on
saying.
That note, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back, and we are going to talk about Indiana.
I guess
we're going to do?
Yes, yeah, sure.
Indiana.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless, it's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
If you've got a cold room or you're feeling drafts in your house, you probably want to take care of that before winter. Here's what you've got to do. Call Ecotelligent Homes for a comprehensive home energy audit. They will find the source of your issue, your licensed teams will install the fixes, they will help you qualify for the right local rebates, and even offer 0% financing. Ecotelligent Homes is an award-winning DTE Energy and Consumers Energy trade ally. Call 248-291-7815 or visit their website at ecotelligenthomes.com.
Hi, this is Seth from MGoBlog. So we bought our home through a local bank. Family friend was the banker, but the underwriter was just it was a nightmare. So we went to refinance. I talked to Matt. It was so different. He shops the loan to different underwriters, so we were a priority for them. And he knows what they needed from us ahead of time, so we didn't have to keep digging through our old paperwork. He's incredibly ethical. He knows the system. He knows where they take advantage. And he keeps a small shop, and he does all the work himself, so he keeps all the costs down. Anyway, that's why I highly recommend Matt. He's licensed in Michigan, Ohio, and Florida. You can give him a call at 734-531-9950. Visit his new office in Ann Arbor on State Street, or go to homesurelending.com/mgoblog, and he'll take care of you. That's Homesure Lending, NMLS number 116-1358.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Wow, that's
like it's a zero on the rave scale.
Oh, careful, Ace. You're going to make me make the next 15 minutes of this podcast all coughing. All right. Ace, describe to me the Indiana Hoosiers.
Well, what do you want to start with, the offense or the defense?
Definitely the offense.
Yeah, so their offense is spearheaded by Mike DeBoard.
Okay, but also Mike Hart.
Yeah, so that, you know, the Mike Hart part hasn't really shown up yet because their offensive line isn't good enough to allow me to even figure out if their running backs are good.
Who's an offensive line coach?
I think Greg Fry's one.
Mike DeVort is an offensive line coach.
But yeah, so them losing Greg Fry and having him be replaced with Mike DeVort is not ideal for them. They have finally replaced Richard Leggow, who is just wildly inaccurate, with redshirt freshman Peyton Ramsey. Who has been, it's kind of surprising that it took this long in retrospect because Ramsey has been much more accurate and also adds a completely new dimension to their offense because he can actually run.
Okay.
So I for their offense, I scouted the Penn State game, and Penn State jumps out to a huge lead in this one because they get the opening kickoff return for a touchdown by Saquon Barkley. They get a couple first half turnovers from Indiana, including a muff punt that they take back for a touchdown. So they're out to a 21-0 lead really quickly. And then Leggow gets pulled when it's 28-7. So given that game script, you'd expect Ramsey to get inserted and just throw, and throw some more. And instead, that's when they finally started running the ball. They had been almost exclusively passing with Leggow out there. And with Ramsey, they actually had a little bit of success on the ground, which then the thing with DeBoard is once he calls a play that works, he just goes right back to it instead of calling like any sort of constraints or anything. So
that's a slight exaggeration.
It's a slight exaggeration.
The waggle's a constraint.
But believe it or not, no waggles in this playbook because they're operating entirely out of the shotgun.
Yeah.
And I mean almost literally entirely. They had two snaps from the pistol that weren't in garbage time, and every other snap was from the gun.
Right. You had like a first and goal from the three, and they were in the gun.
Yes. Yeah. Which actually worked. Spreading them out, sometimes effective. But, you know, with Ramsey, they'll start doing some read option. They had one RPO that worked, and they never went back to it because DeBoard. They run a fair amount of split zone. especially since their tight end is actually pretty decent blocking.
Yep.
And they have Simi Cobbs,
yeah.
A 6'4 NFL level wideout who has been relatively ineffective this year because they just kind of do the chuck it up and pray thing with him a fair amount. So the quarterbacks haven't been so good at the chucking aspect of it, but
so he'll get like at least one 40-yard catch in this game that has been touched by a Michigan quarterback,
most likely. Yeah. He got a touchdown against Penn State on actually a pretty perfect back shoulder throw by Ramsey, and then broke through a tackle to get the extra yardage. But otherwise, he was relatively quiet just because quarterbacks are bad. I had a beautiful collection of Richard Leggow inaccurate pass screen caps, which ended up being not relevant because Ramsey's going to play this whole game.
Yeah.
But,
well, he's going to play part of the game.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens because their offensive line, they have shifted around a lot, and it wasn't very good to begin with. Last year they were starting a true freshman, Coy Cronk, at left tackle. We've talked about kind of how Bradison looked much better than when compared to guys like Coy Cronk, who was just a disaster out there as a true freshman.
Yeah,
which is normal. True freshman left tackle is not a good situation to be in.
Now he's a true sophomore left tackle.
Yeah, which I've definitely noticed marginal improvement, but it's marginal. Indiana is like middling at sack rate on passing downs, and they're like 108th on standard downs.
Okay,
so they're giving up pressure kind of no matter what. They only gave up one sack to Penn State, but it was an easy, like, guy blew right by the right tackle on a speed rush on third down, and the right tackle barely got a hand on him, and he turned the corner at 9 yards.
Okay.
And their interior line, their center is bad enough that they have started giving snaps to a true freshman without giving him a start. They have flipped back and forth between two relatively ineffective right guards. And their left guard is prone to getting pushed multiple yards into the backfield. So Mo Hurst is going to have himself an afternoon.
Okay.
And I don't expect them.
So if they move the ball, it's going to be through the air and with like screens and.
Yeah, it's going to be them their best success against Penn State was catching them in a blitz. You know, like
Purdue stuff.
Yeah, it's, you know, and if they're not RPSing Michigan, they're going to have a very hard time because their offensive line is going to be overmatched against this defensive front. So it doesn't matter whether they're running or passing for the most part. And also their receivers beyond Cobbs. They lost both their really effective slot guys from last year. They lost Nick Westbrook.
Again.
Then Donovan Hale.
I like him.
He's banged up and is on the wrong side of questionable.
Okay.
So they'll go with a redshirt freshman that got 7 of his 9 catches this year last week against Charleston Southern, who Indiana played for some reason.
It was a rescheduled game.
Yeah.
From the Hurricane.
That's right.
Canceled the FIU game.
And then their slot receiver is averaging less than 4 yards a target. and less than 7 yards of reception. So he's kind of, I mean, they'll throw some dink and dunk stuff to him, and he just does nothing with it.
Right, and when they moved the ball against Ohio State, it was all like Cobbs, and then they bracketed him, and it was over.
Yeah, so Michigan should be paying a good deal of attention to Simi Cobbs, and as long as they do that, then they should come out pretty well.
Okay, sounds a lot like the last two games.
Yes. And then we get over to Indiana's defense, and it's good.
What?
Yeah.
Like legitimately good?
I think so. This worried me.
No.
I mean, they did a pretty darn good job against Barkley.
Okay, but so did Northwestern.
That's true. I watched them take on Virginia because, sadly, I wanted to see them play an offense of Michigan's caliber.
Ace.
And Penn State.
Ace, don't say that.
Wildly out of. I mean, it was already in the post, so it's out there.
Don't say it, Ace.
And I have a danger man at each level of the defense for them. I was impressed with their nose tackle, Nate Hoff. Really holds up to doubles well. Will occasionally split one. Was just really strong on the interior.
You know what they call him? The Hoff.
I knew you were going to say that and did not want to just
You should have seen the look of pain on Ace's face. A very visual podcast moment.
So
tell me more about the Hoff.
If I can recover more.
I want to know about the Hoff.
I mean, the Hoff just, he's like a space eater plus. Like,
okay.
Maybe not necessarily. Like, he's 310.
Yeah.
He holds up against double teams. He'll actually make some plays in the backfield every once in a while. He's a very good nose tackle. They don't really have many other playmakers on the defensive line, but they're relatively stout up front. They got decent size.
They have a guy named McCray.
They do.
Is he related?
I don't think so.
Okay.
And then at the linebacker level, they have done a pretty nice job of replacing Marcus Oliver, who is playing nearly at the level of Tigre Scales, who's their best defensive player. Chris Covington has stepped in, and it's pretty much been there hasn't really been any drop off there, and Oliver was a very productive player.
Hello, hey Mom, I'm podcasting right now. Bye.
I was trying to just talk through the ringing. I'm getting a lot of practice at just talking through it these last couple weeks. So they have good linebackers. I mean, they really are pure 4-2-5. So they're just playing the two inside linebackers. Scales and Covington are both. They're both a little undersized. They both run 230 pounds, but they cover a lot of ground sideline to sideline, and the D-line is good at keeping them clean. So they tend to put up some pretty big tackle numbers and get to a lot of plays. And I actually think their secondary got a bit of addition by subtraction because their kind of up-and-coming hybrid space player, Marcelino Ball.
Is
injured and probably not going to play.
But that's
that sounds bad, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But Indiana returns three very experienced safeties who are not Marcelino Ball. They're not as talented as he is. He's a really promising athlete. He's in the wrong place a lot.
Okay.
So when he's not, they like to use him a lot as a blitzer. But when he's not kind of just told, like, fire in this direction and hit somebody, he's not great. And instead,
God, you know a lot about this team. It's weird.
I mean, now I've been doing this for years, dude.
I know
the knowledge is just building.
You just like have like a file on Marcelino Ball.
Yeah. So and I have a file on their two of their three safeties because I drafted them in draft again. So people, it's worth it. Their safeties Fields and Crawford were two of the highest graded coverage safeties in the Big Ten last year. They're pretty good in that role. And then Chase Dutra. We'll slide in, actually, it's strong safety. Tony Fields is a pretty good run defender. We'll move down to the hybrid spot. And then Chase Dutra, who's a fifth-year senior, has started for them extensively over the last few years, is the guy they're bringing in on the back end. And he's pretty solid back there.
So this is basically last year's Michigan defense with, like, downgrades at a lot of, like, the peppers type spots.
Yeah, and they're missing their second corner, A'shaun Riggins, and I didn't get much of a chance to see his replacement because his replacement played against Charleston Southern.
How good can you be?
I'm assuming both corners are because first of all, Rashard Fant is really dang good. Like they have a number one corner who is legitimate.
Didn't you draft him in draft again?
No, I didn't, and I should have. Because we were skeptical of him a couple of years ago because he led the Big Ten with 22 pass breakups,
right,
and it was on a bad defense, and we just kind of figured that that was a product of him getting picked on and getting picked on enough where he got his hands on a bunch of balls.
Uh-huh.
But then he followed it up last year with either 18 or 19 breakups, and Virginia kept throwing the ball at him for some reason, and he was 5 for 5 on knocking away or just blanketing deep shots at him.
Really?
They shouldn't. It was a terrible idea to go at him. Their quarterback, when it was accurate, it was just getting knocked away. What was impressive to me was he had breakups on deep routes in both press man coverage and zone off coverage. So he's solid all around.
What kind of world are we living in?
I know
Indiana gets into.
And what was especially weird is I was almost as impressed with their second corner, but he's hurt now. So
okay,
we'll see. That's I don't know if Michigan will be able to take advantage of it because we're talking about Michigan's receivers who haven't done much this year. But Indiana's second corner may be a spot that they can just man ball this, or
like put Pack in the tight ends and say that they only have two linebackers and see if you can. Just
I think that's the way you have to go about it because otherwise you're asking for
it.
Yeah, I mean you're asking for you're asking for. The good thing is they don't have a strong pass rush. They're not great at generating an organic pass rush.
Does that matter though? Purdue came into the game with one sack.
Kenny Willekes got two sacks last week, so it hopefully won't be overwhelming, but. But they're good enough on the back end where you're asking John O'Korn to complete a bunch of passes against a team that's going to be relatively sound in coverage. I think I'd rather see Michigan just go man ball.
Yeah.
Here
we are.
I'm expecting this game to be a rock fight.
Yeah.
And I do think Michigan...
I should expect to win this rock fight.
Yeah, because Michigan's defense is a couple levels above it. Like, Indiana's good, but they're, like, top 25 good. Michigan is top 3 good.
And what's the spread in this game? Have you...
I think it's something like Michigan minus 7. At least it's what it opened at.
Wow.
I wouldn't be surprised if that's been bet down.
Kind of a reality check there, lords and ladies.
But no, I'm really expecting this to be an ugly game because I think Indiana. I don't see really how they move the ball against Michigan without just breaking a couple random plays.
Yeah,
and Simi Cobbs is very capable of doing that.
Yeah, there's going to be like a Simi Cobbs touchdown drive.
Yeah, and then much else. Every other matchup on that side of the ball, and especially the coaching matchup, skews so heavily in favor of Michigan that I'm feeling pretty good about that.
Man, you're like more down on Mike DeBoard than I am.
Man.
You're like super.
Well, I keep having to watch him in the years since he's been at Michigan. And that doesn't help.
He got a restraining order for a reason, Ace.
So, yeah.
Do they have any teams that are special or... regular teams?
I mean, not particularly. I mentioned they had a muffed punt return that Penn State returned for a touchdown.
How are their specialists?
Griffin Oaks is a good kicker.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah, he's been around for a while. I think he had a bad year in there somewhere, but he's 5 for 5 this year.
Okay.
I didn't get a great read on their punter, but I didn't notice anything jump off the page stats wise. So. Yeah, they're special teams. They gave up a kickoff return for touchdown, but it was to Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, so
that's totally irrelevant to this game. I mean, the kick did land at like the 3, so we might see Michigan have to return a kick, unfortunately.
No.
So, yeah, that's a notable thing. We might see Michigan have to return kickoffs. So we might see Michigan start some drives at the 15.
All right, so Michigan favored by 7 seems about right. Hopefully they can get healthy.
Yeah, and don't expect this to be pretty.
Did you need to tell that to anyone? football.
It also applies to the Indiana side. Cause
don't expect the Harvey Weinstein trial to be pretty, says Ace.
Thanks. I'm glad I'm quoted on that.
All right, let's get to a break, and we'll come back with a Gimme Top 5 of our top calls ever.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships, and we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor, from San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far, because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
Yeah, man.
That's a one on the rave scale.
That's still a zero. That's
it,
like that's
it was
like,
more raving than the last one, but we're really talking about the least ravey song of all time.
That's still like Nick Drake level, man.
Oh yeah, no, I mean, like it's a scale, man. You gotta have
it's a scale.
Well, you know, it's
a
1 out of 10.
There's a price tag on the part of the hummus.
Oh
I
no!
Read. As you can tell, if you watch this on YouTube, like a complete crazy person, we've moved the hummus. And it is time for us to tell you about Lantana's white bean hummus with a pine nut and herb topping. It is delectable.
It sure
I enjoy
is.
It.
Yeah.
It is not made of kittens.
Which we have learned is the most important thing about Lantana hummus, if the feedback from our advertising is
involuntary
any indication.
Marketing campaign.
We're good at those.
They keep giving us money to like ruin their marketing people's lives.
It's working.
It's working.
The problem is they're going to eventually have to like actually make that their catchphrase.
I know.
And then they're going to really be in trouble.
They're going to be like, we
it's made from real beans and not kittens.
We've made a terrible mistake.
We hitched our wagon to the wrong people.
This blog has ruined my life and my career. But we do sell some hummus.
I hope their marketing people don't like own cats. Just come home and they get
Wait,
all bitter.
No.
Just reminds them of the thing that's driving them crazy in their work life.
I hope people who aren't Lantana hummus don't own cats because we know what happens to those.
That's a good point.
Check out all of their flavors at lantanafoods.com and find it at Bush's, Kroger's, Meijer, or check your local grocer. How you doing, Ace?
Doing all right.
Gimmicky top five time. So we have a Ufer segment coming up. And it just occurred to me that I have a segment that's like a thing that's called UFR. I didn't mean it to be like an inadvertent Ufer tribute, but I'm glad that it is.
It works.
So we have Dr. Sapp here. If you're on camera, wave Dr. Sapp.
He's hidden by a bow tie. Oh, you can see his hand.
Okay, good. So we thought we would do our top five calls of all time. And I wanted to spread it out. So there's one from each candidate here.
We also wrote these up while sitting here prepping for the show.
Right,
so
and Sapp's
here. These are not going to be comprehensive.
And like, and Sapp knows everything that has happened in sports since 1972? Something like that. So like, he's just going to look at us and be like, oh.
Like, this is terrible. This
amateurs.
Is the worst list. I only have one. Well, I have two Michigan
players. It's going to be like, you know remember when we had Bruce Mate on?
Yes. And our like, yeah, our list repelled so badly.
And it was like our greatest like, there's dumb things we're proud of.
Yes, and he had...
And mine was like, I answered a quiz bowl question once, and he was like, I set up a prize fight when I was in third grade.
He like starts off with a better story than any we've ever told on the show.
And, yeah, so he's never coming back on.
No. You're not allowed back, Bruce. Sorry.
Can't show up. Who are we? We're the hosts.
Yes, we are.
All right, Ace. Okay. You're number five.
My number five, it's as much about the play as the call.
Okay.
But kind of end of basketball games, I love the way you get kind of the build.
Yeah.
And so Marv Albert was calling the game when Trey Burke hit the shot.
Oh, which shot?
The shot.
Oh, that shot.
Yes. And, you know, there's nothing particularly spectacular about the play-by-play call.
It is Marv Albert.
But it's Marv Albert calling one of the greatest moments that I've witnessed of a sports team that I root for or not. And I actually happened to be watching this game on TV, which for a lot of these I wasn't necessarily, especially for Michigan sports. So that one sticks because I actually like took that one in live.
Do we have that lined up there?
So that's it. I mean, it's just the build and just the pandemonium and the fact that Marv Albert knows how to kind of ride that pandemonium. Well, he's been there before.
Marv Albert is, I mean, he had some personal issues.
Sure.
And he's so good at his job that people were like,
that's fine.
That's fine.
Yeah. Wrist slap, we're going to bring you back.
Yeah, you're...
You are just inextricably tied to the NBA playoffs. He did the Jordan switching hands call, which, you know, a spectacular move, and I could have put that on here, too.
Yeah, he didn't do anything wrong. He just did something that often crushes careers.
Yes.
But because he's Marv Albert...
it worked out.
Not so much.
He's fine.
We're also wishy-washy on genocide people. My number five, are we ready for this, guys? More or less. Iceland versus England in the most recent Euros. And this is not in English, but it is the most over-the-top homer call in the history of anything. This keeps going.
Does his voice ever come back down?
No. He still talks like that. So there's like U.S. announcers are never that over the top. They've never just died.
Some Gus Johnson kind of every once.
No, but
in a
like
while. Not quite to that level.
When it's like a national team and you're Icelandic or like the Egyptian guys who just made the World Cup, it's a totally different realm of just like I'm throwing away any pretense of objectivity and I am just
here that's frowned upon but right. There that you know
when, you'll, yeah and it's,
when you're with like the size of Wichita and you make the World Cup
so
you get to scream as much as you
don't,
want
don't bring that up
sorry
god damn it
hey you're the one who brought Icelandic soccer into this
I know maybe I'll move there maybe I'll be an Icelander they won't take me I know that for a fact. Ace, you're number four.
Speaking of Gus Johnson, this was kind of him like introducing himself to the world, but the insane UCLA-Gonzaga finish with Adam Morrison where he just completely loses his mind.
Inside! The freshman up! And they go in front! Rivio! Last chance to dance!
Unbelievable!
Oh, what a game!
Unbelievable!
What a game! UCLA! Unbelievable! Are you kidding me?
So, I mean, pretty standard fare Gus Johnson, but that was kind of like the first time that he became super notable for that.
Yeah, I can't deal with Gus Johnson haters. And he has a lot of haters.
He really does.
And it's just like, dude, he...
This is supposed to be fun.
Right.
And he clearly has a blast.
Yeah.
And, well, and you can't say that about every announcer that calls a game.
I mean, he fires you up, man. I'm like, oh, yeah. I'm watching a Gus Johnson game.
And if I'm watching a tight game where I don't have a rooting interest, I want Gus Johnson on that call.
Yeah.
Because he will raise my interest in a football game just because of the fact that he is announcing it with that level of passion.
Yeah, he was terrible at soccer. They made him do soccer. Now, my number four is a mean one.
Uh-oh.
It's a good mean one, though.
Oh.
It is... Don Crickey.
Oh, yes.
The Notre Dame announcer.
I just made more noise than Don Crickey.
After Jeremy Gallen catches the pass.
Quarterback for the Michigan football team, and he's a poor thrower, but on the run.
Screw you, buddy.
He's a dangerous man. He's one of the great runners in college football.
And Notre Dame making sure they've got their speed rushers in there. Darius Fleming, Steve Fowler coming off the edge.
Second down and 10 for Michigan at their 20, down by 3. Here comes the rush. Now Robinson steps up, throws a long ball, a wide open receiver. This is incredible. Michigan's going to score. This is hard to believe.
Also, he went out at like the 15.
Yep.
Out of bounds on the far side of the field. Two wide receivers right, double tight ends are in the game. They're not going to run it. They have to throw it, down by 3. Robinson drops, takes a look. Here comes a rush, throws to the end zone. Incomplete.
wrong?
The crowd goes crazy.
There's a penalty marker down, and he did catch the ball. We have no signals.
Touchdown's been signaled several times by now.
There's a guy like doing this in the end zone.
Also, 111,000 people doing that, too.
So, yeah, that was a mean one. I'm sure he's a great announcer, but... You know,
so good.
He can get bent. Ace shoot number three.
So this one does not actually have audio. It is from when Keith Jackson did his final, the Texas-USC National Championship game.
Yeah.
There was a point where the camera cuts to a Texas defensive lineman who's a true freshman listed at like somewhere in the neighborhood of 300 to 320 pounds. And, you know, a big boy. And... Keith Jackson, just off the cuff, he's got a zillion Jacksonisms, and he just goes, if he keeps eating his cornbread, he'll be man-sized one day. And me and my friends were watching that game, like, we say that to each other all the time. Like, that line has just stuck to where I can say it verbatim off the top. If you just say the corn, like, you know, Texas-USC, number one line, it's the cornbread line.
Okay.
But it was just, I mean, because this dude was very man-sized already.
Right, yeah.
And just, you know, the way Keith Jackson put it, he's the best to ever do it, so.
I have something sort of like that. So it's the Super Bowl where Tom Brady is, like, this is his first game.
Mm-hmm.
And they drive for, like, the winning Vinatieri field goal. And at some point during this game, you know, they come back from commercial and... something weird has happened, and Pat Summerall says, "Welcome to Shock Dome 36. I was watching this with my friend Rafi, and it's the same thing where it's like, hey, what's up? Welcome to Shock Dome 36, Rafi! Shock Dome!
That's especially great coming from, like, Mr. Deadpan Pat Summerall,
right,
too.
Yeah. Well, he said it in his, like... very
dulcet tones.
Yeah, he said it like Pat Summerall says it. Yeah. Welcome to Shock Dome 36. I'm like, that's not how you say that. Shock Dome.
But that's great.
What are you going to do? My number three, these are all really tied for number one, honestly, on my list. And this is...
It's tough to choose between those.
My favorite soccer call of all time, probably my favorite soccer moment of all time. It is, of course, the Go, Go USA call after the Algeria game.
He claims it. Distribution, brilliant. Landon Donovan, there are things on here for the USA. Can they do it here? Cross, and Dempsey's denied again, and Donovan has scored! Oh, can you believe this? Go, go, USA! Sadly through! Oh, it's incredible! You could not write a script like this!
Oh, fuck you, Sunil Gulati.
Dude, that was coming.
Man. Now I'm all broken up.
Hey, you've done that twice to yourself here.
Terrible. Anyway, Ace, your number two.
This one I was not watching, but I love this call so much. It's on, growing up, I and even still occasionally, like, I loved watching highlight reels of dunks. And the send it in Jerome dunk call by Bill Raftery is just the best.
Oh, God.
So the context for that is that Pittsburgh's Jerome Lane just shatters a backboard with a dunk, and pandemonium ensues, and Bill Raftery utters a timeless line. And he's just, I love Raftery.
Raftery is great. The breaking of a backboard in a basketball game is like the best worst thing.
Yeah, because you're in for a delay.
Right, it's like, going to be like a half
multiple
hour.
Multiple hours, yeah. Possibly. Like, it's kind of ruined the game.
But everybody's like, what?
Like, And yet, one of my biggest sports regrets is I did not go to the Robert Traylor broken backboard game. And one of my closest friends did, and he still lords that over me every once in a while. Because that you don't get to see that too often.
My number two is from the man himself. I actually have started listening to some of the old, like, U for CDs. We're going to play you something from one of them in the next segment. But this is just my favorite U for call of all time.
Call it what you will. Fly to the right is Bo Rather. It's Taylor deep and Cypress close. Larry Sippa under center in a balanced line. Sippa rolls out to the right. Pitches off to Taylor, and Taylor's to the 20. Down to the 15, down to 10, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Touchdown, Billy Taylor! Touchdown, Billy Taylor! Billy Taylor scored a touchdown from 21 yards out. The crowd goes berserk. Michigan leads 9-7. Oh man, Euchre's been broadcasting for 27 years. I have never seen anything like this. 32 years ago in 19.
So I hear tell of some elderly gentlemen who were students when this happened or listening on the radio, and as you get older and you have a wife, you have sex less often, and they would like tell each other when they
had. That was not where I expected that to go.
No, they'd tell when they needed to communicate to each other that they had gotten lucky. They would just say, "Touchdown, Billy Taylor."
Okay, that's pretty amazing.
So now everybody can do this. Everybody of any age who gets lucky. Just tell your friends, touchdown, Billy Taylor.
Wow. Okay.
Pretty good.
That's
huh?
pretty damn good.
All right, Ace, you're number one.
Mine is also from the man himself, but it is the Wangler to Carter call.
Fair enough.
Under center is Wangler at the 45. He goes back. He's looking for a receiver. He throws downfield to Carter. Carter.
I never know when to cut these music clips off.
We still haven't hit the, like, they don't care, they don't give a damn about the extra point.
Let it ride.
He was not wrong.
It all happened. You're listening to it. I hope you can hear me because I've never been so happy in all my God, 59 years. All I've seen, I have broadcast 347 ball games. I've never had one like this. The play again. They put the ball on the 45-yard line. Then Wagner went back to his own 45-yard line. Carter went streaking down there, went in and caught it at the 15. A man hit him at the 10-yard line, dove into the end zone. Michigan wins 27-21. They aren't even going to try the extra point. Who cares? Who gives a...
Oh, yes. How do you do that off the cuff?
The
whole football Valhalla fielding Yost thing. He's talking while honking the horn initially. Like, he's unbelievable.
I mean, that's probably just an involuntary reflex.
I'm sure with him, like, yeah, but unbelievable.
All right, my number one, I mean no offense to Bob Ufer, but Keith Jackson is the GOAT of announcing, and I've memorized this.
In a field position game, a good punter like Bartholomew is priceless.
Snap is low, but he gets it out all right. Oh, my goodness, look at this. He runs Woodson all the way back to the 22-yard line. Woodson's got one block.
Flags.
That was the pertinent information. Keith.
A man who knows exactly what I'm thinking. Are there any flags? Please, God, no flags. So, yeah, that's our top five. How'd we do, Sap?
That was very good.
All right, Sap gives us a seal of approval.
Awesome. I wasn't expecting it, but I'm glad we got it.
Thank you to our own personal douche, Morris. I mean, no offense, but, you know. Parks and Recreation. Man, that came out wrong. That really came out wrong.
I did not say anything because I was like, what is happening?
We like you, Morris. Thank you.
Isn't the douche on air talent, though?
Oh, he is.
Yeah, it's Ira and the douche.
That's true.
But they've got their guy.
Are you Ira or the douche? I guess you're the douche because Ira and the douche.
Yeah.
Ha. Anyway, this is a very productive conversation. We are going to come back and talk Bob Ufer with Steve Zapperdanis.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGO Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Is that a three?
Yeah, it's about a three.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a three. That's a good three. I mean, it's not like
it's nowhere, it's nowhere close to Ravy, but no. It's not like ambient.
That is correct, AZ and Bender. My voice is giving out. So how you doing, Sap?
Good, good. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
This is Dr. Sap. Are you a real doctor?
My wife says no.
Oh. That's should have brought that up. There. Well, obviously
I've told her that, you know, you are, anyways.
what did I have to do with this?
I was just kind of being funny.
Okay, he's leaving me hanging. He left me hanging. That's fine. That's fine. We're going to move on. Sap is one of the great treasures in the Michigan fandom. He and his friend John Crick have been putting together Michigan squads on video games since in television days.
Oh gosh, way before. Remember the old GameStar?
No.
Yeah, there was we bought all those original video games and the original random generator games that we were. Oh yeah, we were all into that.
And so, like, occasionally we have need for some part of ephemera from years past. Like, I think we asked you for the game day before the 2002 Washington games. Like, oh yeah, I got that.
Yep.
So.
And I did.
You did. And part of Michigan's institutional memory. And so we want to talk about Bob Ufer. We couldn't think about anyone better to bring in to talk about it than you.
Cool.
And actually, the impetus for this is I'm driving down to Kentucky for Christmas this year. And I've had these Ufer CDs, but I've never actually put them in. And I'm like, all right, well, I'm driving now by myself with my kid, and we're going to throw it on there. And so I'm listening to, I think it's called Ufer Five Decades of Michigan Football.
Correct.
And about halfway through this CD is the most amazing bow thing I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, track five.
So,
sure enough.
So we just wanted to play that and let people like experience this. I mean, it gives you every insight into both the personalities of Ufer and Bo that you could ever want.
80 million people on TV, 88,000.
So this is the 1973 Ohio State game. What, four?
Going to be snapped.
The famous kick that was good.
It
right.
It is snapped. It's spotted. It's kicked. It's end over end, and it is. It is. It is good. No good. No good. Oh no. No. No.
What? Why is the reverb?
No. No.
I think that was a little bit of extra added.
Saw that field goal at Ohio State ruled not good, and he said, "No, no, no, no." That's exactly the way he felt.
It is.
You know, we tape the pregame show on Friday afternoon.
Right.
He comes into my office, and the first thing I say to him is, "You aren't going to like this, Bob." "What's the matter? What's the matter?" I said, "Leach is out. Hurt his ankle. He's not going to play against Notre Dame." "Oh, no, no."
by the way, you do a great imitation of him.
Yeah, I used to really kid him about that. You know, I'd come up with all the bad things that happened to us during the week and how we can't win this game.
Yeah.
So then we get started on the game, and he starts out, "Well, here we are, ladies and gentlemen, in the bowels of Michigan Stadium. It's moments before the opening kickoff before the Notre Dame game, and I'm here with Bo Schembechler, the head football coach." Bo, and then he'd go on with the interview. Almost die laughing because it's Friday. We're not in any bowels of the stadium.
So I'm listening to this on the car ride down there, and just the no, no, no. Happens, and it happens a couple times. I actually go back and listen to this track again because I'm just dying laughing. And for like 2 months after that, whenever my child was upset, he did that. It was unbelievable. It was just as good as Bo's. And like, you know, I was like, "No, you can't have that. You got to wait." And he's like, "No, no, no, no." And I couldn't tell if he was just being a child or if it was just like, this is how we do this thing. And you know, it just occurred to me that like Michigan this is the only thing that Michigan has this, and a lot of other schools do not. Some of them have similar play-by-play guys in their past, but nobody like Ufer.
Yeah,
and nobody
right
who brought that emotion. And like, I just don't think people bring up like calls from defeats from 40
no.
years ago. Only Bob Ufer.
He made them memorable, and that's he did it for four decades, and that's the other thing too. A lot of people just remember him from the 70s, but this was going on way before that. And I can remember Don Canham basically calling him a pioneer, and Keith Jackson said the same thing. I mean, when you have a guy that where the fans at the stadium would bring a pocket radio. How's this for dating?
Yeah.
They bring a pocket radio to listen to Ace, to your point. They'd want to hear the calls. There's nothing over the PA system, but Ufer gave you all the stats. So they were listening with their radios at the game.
To your point, my dad, when we went to games when I was growing up, he would bring a pocket radio because he went to Michigan when Bob Ufer
yeah,
was
this,
doing
this
radio.
This doesn't really happen in other fan bases, but when I was growing up, the same thing happened where like they had – half the people going in the stadium would have like a radio call, and it wasn't Ufer anymore, but that was just like part of the culture that Ufer had given Michigan football.
Yeah, it was an amazing gift, and you know, his everlasting legacy when you think about it, because you like I said, you relive the defeats almost as much as you do the victories.
I mean, I've felt that recently.
Quite recently.
Twice this week.
I mean, I've made that a couple of my ringtones, and
what?
You know,
that call?
Well, not that particular one, but
that's some dark stuff. If you ever do that,
it goes.
You should put that on your wife's phone.
It goes deep.
One of my friends had the Wangler to Carter call as his ringtone, and then we were hanging out with one of the Ufers because you know his family all lives here,
right? Yeah,
and so we knew a granddaughter.
Good name drop.
And she's like, you know, good good ringtone. It's like, oh, this is embarrassing.
I got to say, I think one of the coolest things was they showed Billy Taylor how to make that call his ringtone on his phone.
Did he do it?
So he did it.
Okay.
Nice.
So that's actually my Billy Taylor. So when Billy Taylor calls me, I hear Touchdown Billy Taylor.
In a different now that's a good name drop.
Also, now it's just going to mean something.
It has a totally different meaning now after this podcast.
I just ruined everything.
You've got a whole generation of fans there who just want to change that reference, maybe.
Touchdown, Billy Taylor.
No, I guess it's called hitting Peter. That's a little bit different reference.
Do we have more clips, or was that it?
I got this whole 79 clip.
The 79 clip?
Which we already played.
Okay. What we're going to do is, because Ace is our chief enunciator.
Oh, no.
We are going to give him a list of things that Ufer has said, and he's going to try to say them.
All right. See how this goes. I have not read these.
And you have not. You tried to look at them, and I was
I started to take a peek, and Brian deboed that.
And you got to, I mean, you don't got to, like, do a Ufer impression.
No, that's good, because mine's terrible.
But you got to give it something here.
Oh, yeah. There will be some enthusiasm here. Yeah, okay. I won't be... Taking the slow
line. I talked to a customer service rep at Blue Cross Blue Shield. Perfectly nice woman. Mm-hmm. Very monotone. Don't be her.
I will not be her. All right. Going down that mod sod like a penguin with a hot herring in his cummerbund.
Nice.
That right. Whirling dervish Gordy Bell who could run 15 minutes in a phone booth and he wouldn't even touch the sides.
I'm pretty good, yeah.
Prejudiced? Partial? You better believe I am. Michigan football is a religion, and Saturday is the holy day of obligation.
Wait a minute. There's a. That's not. You didn't.
Better believe.
Believe. Yeah.
Sorry. That caught me. I haven't read these yet.
I know, but
better believe.
I've never seen
today.
Believe.
This is for
written
everything.
B apostrophe leave. You see, this is already throwing me off.
Oh my God! His enunciation. What
it's
happened?
It's falling apart. Running through that Buckeye line like a bull with a bee in his ear.
All right, yeah.
We're down in the snake pit at Ohio State, and our maize and blue daubers are high right now because we're getting ready to do battle with Dr. Strange Hayes and his scarlet and gray legions.
That's pretty good, yeah.
These cotton-picking maize and blue eyes watch Johnny Wing and Wangler and Anthony the Darter Carter combine for the greatest single play in the 100-year history of glorious Michigan football. That's the last one on the list, and I think I did all right.
Good, yeah, good job. Although you had that like moment in the middle where you just kind of like...
He threw me for a moment. You lost your whole... It was the belief.
I mean,
thing.
You're reading that, and he's doing that off the cuff.
That's the crazy part. That was all in his head.
He's not doing all of that off the cuff.
I mean, he had a lot of stuff scripted, but that stuff he was ad-libbing.
The Dr. Strange Hayes, he's definitely scripted.
Well, sure, yeah.
But I mean, we
74,000 truck drivers, maybe that's off the cuff.
We heard the end of the Wangler Carter call.
Yeah, that's...
That has to be at least mostly off the cuff. No, that was elaborate.
Yeah.
So
it was good stuff.
There are
football
geniuses
Valhalla,
in the world.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. Remember Bo asking Brandstetter at the end of the Michigan replay, what is a Valhalla? That may have been the first time Bo had ever heard that.
Do you have a favorite that we haven't mentioned yet?
Well, of course, Rick Leach was my, favorite player growing up, and when he scored against Ohio State in 1977, that was, I've got the play memorized. Ricky Leach rolls out to the right, he cuts back in, he's going in, he scores, touchdown.
See, that's like the customer service rep that I had. That was a little bit flat.
It was a little bit
flat. I mean, it's fine. Sure. He's a doctor, everybody.
Yeah.
Do we have that?
I don't know if we have that one.
Go for it. Oh, wait, what are we pointing at?
Because we're not hearing it.
A hello, phone. We can't hear anybody.
Can't hear him? Oh.
Hello, guys. Hey, how you doing?
Oh, God bless your cotton picking maize and blue Michigan heart.
Wait, stop just a second. We'd like to introduce Dennis and the OC, who is the current purveyor of the world's best you for impersonation. Now you can go. Oh, do we lose him? Oh, God.
This is great radio here, fellas. Come on now. And we have the view of the high-class clothing in the background there. Come on, this is great stuff here. I'll tell you what. Oh, my amazing blue daubers are up. We're coming back from the under with that emotional drive, just like the U.S. of A in World War II, just like those Wolverines are going to do. Oh, I can hardly wait. Oh, Ace is going down there to Bloomington himself because he's going to have that creative game plan. Oh, it's going to be amazing blue spots before our eyes as those Wolverines are going to be hungry to get a victory, and it's going to be a great big Michigan Saturday afternoon. What do you say, Brian?
I say thank you. I mean,
thank you, Fielding H. Yost.
Well, I mean, Dennis is a resource, just like you. I mean, not everybody can just like, all right, we need our UFER impersonation guy to call up. And thanks to Dennis, we have that. Thanks, Dennis.
Well, you're welcome. And you guys do a great job on the show. Keep up the great work. And I remember in the Notre Dame game of 78, oh, Butch Wolfolk fumbled, but by God, he recovered himself. And those Wolverines might have fumbled on Saturday, but by God, they're going to recover themselves this weekend. And it's going to be a great big 2017 season after all, especially that last weekend of the year when we nullify the Buckeyes. I can hardly wait.
Thanks to this.
I hope he's right.
Oh, certainly. I have no concerns about anything in that game, especially not the offensive line versus the Ohio State's defensive line. I predict a 75-2 victory.
Mm. Pessimistic, in my
Pessimistic.
Opinion.
All right, we have one more UFER thing that we're going to give to you as your outro. Thanks for coming along and talking to us at Dr. Sapp. We will see you guys next week, as long as we can get this queued up. It's a very professional podcast.
Under center is Wangler at the 45. He goes back. He's looking for a receiver. He throws down to the corner.
Look up into football's Valhalla and thank Fielding Yost twice.
What is a Valhalla?
That is the great beyond. That is where all great coaches go and put X's and O's on black.
There's only one man that could adequately describe that play. That's Bob Uecker.
Wasn't that beautiful?
Yeah, that was something.
Radio 3.5 was recorded in front of a live retail audience at the Bow Store. We'd like to thank our sponsors, Underground Printing, the Bow Store, the residents in Ann Arbor Downtown, Homecheer Lending, Peak Wealth Management, the Alumni Association of the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Lantana Hummus, Human Element, Ecotelligent Homes, and Michigan Law Grad.
No. That's exactly the way he felt.